Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. We are about to embark on the most exciting tax season, I think, in most of our lifetimes. It's the new tax reform under Donald Trump. And to help us understand what changes here, a lot is going to change. Here is our tax whisperer from the accounting firm CLA, Don DeSantis. So, Don, what effects have, let's start with the shutdown. What effects have you seen due to the shutdown?
Well, good morning, Dave. My own encounters have been interesting, and that is if you try and call the IRS these days, you get these recordings that basically say they can't talk to you. They seem to have shut down a lot of their audit work, and there's a whole division within the IRS called appeals. And the IRS has furloughed 87% of their employees, and there are now only 18 people in the United States working in the appeals division.
Wow.
But outside of that, most people are concerned about filing the tax return. How is this going to impact me if I file my tax return? Well, originally the IRS had said, we are going to continue processing returns, but we don't know when we can issue refunds. And that caused a sort of a hornet's nest to get stirred up. And just today, the IRS announced, no, they will process refunds. You know, it might be a little slow, but they are going to process refunds. And they're officially opening tax season on January 28th.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good news, but I'm also hearing reports that whether the refunds are on time or not, getting through to an IRS officer if you need help is next to impossible.
Oh, well, we call the IRS and we can't seem to get through with, to them right now. What's interesting is, you know, they were shut down December 21st like everybody else, except that Congress decided to fund one task force, just one task force dealing with interpretation of the new tax law.
I see.
That's been fully funded. Everybody else in the IRS is getting furloughed.
Okay, so that's what they're funding. So I guess then if you have a question about the new tax law, you can get that answered?
No, because you can't reach them by the phone these days. They've shut down all their fax lines. The IRS still uses faxes, by the way, for most of their communications. They've shut down all their fax lines. It's just that when people are asking questions like, well, what does this mean in the new law? That group is still working and they're publishing their findings, but you can't reach them by phone.
Now, under tax reform, one very important category has been taken away, and that is miscellaneous itemized deductions, which, as I understand it, that includes, for example, if you have investments and your investment advisor charges you a fee,
yes.
you can no longer deduct that.
Yes, exactly. Your investment advisor fees, your financial planner, unfortunately, your accountant's fees, unless it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a business, if it's you're an individual, your accounting fees, all your job expenses. Plus, as an employee, if you pay things out of pocket, your employer doesn't reimburse you for.
So like teachers, for example, teachers who buy class supplies, they can no longer deduct that?
There was a special provision for teaching supplies, but it was only up to a certain dollar amount. Anything above that went into this category. So that could be eliminated. But like union dues, work clothing, you know, you say, well, I have work boots or I have to wear something, you know, for my job. Yeah, all those things that fell into this category called miscellaneous are now gone.
And home equity mortgages, no longer deductible.
Unless the money was used explicitly to construct or remodel your property. But if you used it for any other purpose, they're gone.
Oh, like to refinance a loan, for example.
Yes.
You cannot deduct the interest for that anymore.
No.
And alimony is no longer deductible?
Yes, that's correct. And so it's really interesting because there's two sides of it. The person paying the alimony can no longer deduct it. The person receiving the alimony no longer has to report it as income.
Ah, I see.
But here's the thing that's a little confusing. That's for divorces that are executed, divorce decrees executed after 1/1/19.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a divorce decree from 2013, the old rules still apply.
I see.
But I mean, I hate to say it, but I've got clients going through divorce and, you know, somebody's now saying, well, you know, I want you to pay me support of, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 whatever a month, that's now a big item because if I'm the payer, I don't get to deduct that. So when I go to court on my divorce, I've got to really think about what I'm going to agree to because if I make $150,000 a year and I agree to pay $75,000 in support, I'm taxed on the $150,000, whereas it used to be I'd only be taxed on $75,000.
So it sounds like this is going to make divorce a little bit harder.
A little more contentious, perhaps.
Wow. What about the idea that we could file our taxes on a postcard? I believe I saw the postcard.
Oh, yeah. They showed a postcard. Nobody believes it. First off, the IRS doesn't want postcards. They're trying to force everybody to file electronically. So unless they come up with an electronic postcard, they don't want a postcard. Plus, if you look at the postcard, it's kind of funny because you see like 10 or 12 or 13 lines on the postcard, and then each one of them is C attached. So there's like a schedule. So you could have a postcard with 10 schedules attached to it.
This is very disappointing. I wanted to be able to file my taxes on a postcard. And you're saying there is a postcard, but there's 8 pages attached to it.
It could be. The other thing I want to point out is on Schedule A, people who itemize deductions.
Yes.
Well, if their miscellaneous itemized deductions are gone, if taxes are capped at no more than $10,000, if I'm a married couple filing jointly, the standard deduction has risen to $24,000. So let's say I have a lot of taxes. Okay, I'm capped at $10,000. Doesn't matter how much my taxes are. I only get $10,000. If my mortgage is paid off, or if it's paid down, I'm not going to itemize anymore unless I have $14,000 or more in charitable deductions. It's kind of like the only thing left.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is estimated that people who itemize deductions, it could drop to maybe 10% of all tax returns. There's your simplification.
Yeah. So it is simpler. A lot of people will no longer find it worthwhile to itemize deductions.
Oh, yes, a lot. And that's got charitable organizations running kind of scared.
Why?
Well, they're afraid that people, when they realize that they don't, quote, get a tax deduction anymore for the charitable contribution, maybe they won't fork out the money.
Oh, nonsense. People give to charity because they have love in their hearts.
I agree, but it still has charitable organizations nervous.
Now, this has all been billed as a tax cut. So on balance, even though I'm losing all these deductions, the rates are going to be much lower, right? So I should still get a tax cut, shouldn't I?
It is estimated because nobody knows yet, right? We haven't gone through a tax season. But it is estimated that most people will get a tax cut. But it's very individual. If you were somebody that had a lot of miscellaneous itemized deductions, a lot of financial advisor fees, maybe you had high property taxes, or you lived in California, not only are you paying property taxes, you're paying California state income taxes, you know, those are all capped at $10,000. There's going to be winners and losers. But I will say two things. Corporations are probably going to do very well, the new 21% corporate rate. Mm-hmm. Corporations are going to probably do very well. And people who own businesses and get this 20% reduction in their taxes on the business income are probably going to do really well.
Well, that sounds like the key then, incorporate.
Yeah.
Thanks to our tax whisperer, Don DeSantis, working on the front lines at the Seattle accounting firm CLA. Thank you, Don.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Remember all the stories you did about school funding last year?
Oh, a little thing, McClary?
Yeah.
A little thing called that?
How much money was it? $2
billion? Was it two to somewhere between
$2 billion
to $4
billion a year, right?
Right, so yeah, for the exactly. So for the biennium, yeah.
And so you'd figure that now the state is fully funding education. I believe the Supreme Court has certified that it qualifies. Schools should have everything they need. Well, not quite, especially when it comes to new classrooms and new schools. Here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
The problem? The McCleary funding solution for basic education is all about operational costs, not capital or construction costs, which cover the cost of paying for new schools and repairs or upgrades. For those costs, most districts have to pass school construction bonds. And Bethel School District Superintendent Tom Siegel says that's been a problem. With their fourth attempt at getting a $443 million school construction bond to build new schools and upgrade and remodel others, failing for the fourth time in November.
You know, eventually, if we simply run out of the ability to stuff any more kids into the classrooms we currently have, and there is no bond, then something's going to have to give, and the board of directors will have to make a decision based on the input they're getting from these citizens group that are studying the questions. You either have, you know, those sort of crazy solutions, or you finally pass a bond and build the buildings, and then 3 years later, you suddenly have the new building online. It takes 3 years to build a building.
Those crazy solutions he's talking about are proposals being considered in his district to deal with the massive overcrowding if no school bond gets passed when it's back on the ballot in February. Among them, split days that would see kids going to school anywhere from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. or year-round options.
You know, we're getting to a point where something has to give. The easiest, simplest thing is to build new buildings, but the local voters aren't willing to do that.
That's left schools in his district and many others in the state struggling to come up with money for new schools, leaving them with hundreds of portables, massive overcrowding, and rickety buildings.
You can go to Bethel High School and watch the water leak into the office, and you can just watch the water cascading down into a trash can. Bethel High School really needs major work. It needs to be replaced. And the other buildings are just, you know, are wearing out. It's, we have portables in particular that really are kind of in bad shape.
And Democratic State Senator Lisa Wellman, who heads the Senate Education Committee, says other schools across the state are dealing with unsafe conditions.
At some schools that reported, we've got asbestos, we've got collapsing ceilings, we've got lead in the water because we've got old pipes that we need to, you know, really re-engineer. We need a new building. Having a collapsing ceiling is not good as far as kids are concerned.
But many of those districts have the same issue. They cannot get the bonds passed. In fact, in November, 13 districts ran bonds and only 4 won. Another 5 would have won if not for one thing. The supermajority of 60% needed to pass the bonds.
The culprit to this is, very frankly, the supermajority requirement that was inserted into the Constitution in 1944 as a result of World War II, and it continues to this day to really cause problems throughout the entire state. Kids end up in school buildings that are crowded or are unhealthy, insecure, or potentially dangerous in some cases.
That decades-old supermajority requirement was an effort to provide tax relief during wartime that many say is way past outdated and needs to change, especially with many bonds failing by just 1 or 2 percentage points.
This law is a major impediment to being able to do and provide a fair environment for kids to be in to learn. And it's really part of the, in my opinion, the state's obligation to provide a decent education to all the kids. You've got to have a place for the kids to be. And this 60% supermajority requirement prevents that from happening.
The only way to change the need for that 60% approval, an amendment to the state constitution. Senator Wellman has already pre-filed one proposal that would drop it to a simple majority of 51%.
This is something that I'm certainly championing going forward this session. I don't necessarily think that we're going to make it through on a simple majority, and I expect that there will be another bill or two coming in at a different number, but something that still is moving in the right direction.
She believes it's probably more likely to pass around the 55% mark, but started low to negotiate. Several other lawmakers have also said they'll support ditching that supermajority requirement, and the state schools chief has asked for it. In the end, though, it's still going to be up to voters. In order to amend the state constitution, 2/3 of the legislature has to first approve it. Then the issue goes to the ballot.
Hannah Scott, and she joins us live now. Hannah, did we know this, that the whole McCleary debate was only about operating expenses, had nothing to do with the actual physical buildings?
I knew that, but I covered it, and I don't think it got discussed quite as often as probably it should have been, because I don't know that most voters know that, right? So the bonds are coming up to the ballot. You're already paying more property taxes. You feel like school funding's been solved, right? And I think a lot of voters maybe didn't get that or are feeling tax fatigue, which we hear so much about. But these bonds, this predates McCleary. There's been issues getting bonds passed for years in this state. For instance, in the Bethel School District, they had asbestos issues and lead in the water and various other issues in their school district years back. They had only, over the last several years, they passed one bond in 2001, another in 2006 to clean up some of their health issues. That's it. 2006 is the last one. That's how long this has been an issue.
Well, doesn't this lay the ground then for another lawsuit? Can you argue, is the Constitution that specific? How can you argue that basic education does not include fixing up buildings that are actively leaking during school hours?
That is not in the definition that McCleary was built around. However, there was just a legislative task force that just wrapped up meetings a couple of weeks ago that came out and did recommend changing this to that simple majority to pass school bonds. But some of the people there brought up the idea, look, is this the next McCleary? Do we need to make this building our schools and giving these schools and kids a place to have a classroom that is safe? Do we need to make that our priority and our problem?
Right, because in communities that have the money, they pass these bonds, and I don't know if the margin is really the determining factor. And the reason you don't pass a bond in the poorer districts is because people haven't got the money.
Yeah, I mean, in these, some of these failed by just a sliver. I'm talking a tenth of a percentage point. I think it was 0.9 of a percentage point that Bethel failed in November. I do want to point out Bethel will be back on the ballot in February, as will several other bonds.
All right. Kyle Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Choke Points. Let's go. Brought to you by Online Trading Academy. City of Seattle says it's ready to handle the upcoming three-week closure of Highway 99 through Seattle. But, how far is it willing to go to keep the streets open? Just how tough is the enforcement going to be? And Chris has been looking into that.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you, the city, if it wanted to just make a ton of money during this closure by writing tickets, it could. And I guarantee you there's going to be no shortage of moving violations. I guarantee you that it would be like fish in a barrel. But the city has adopted a more neighborly posture when it comes to writing tickets during the upcoming 3 weeks.
It's about working with the community. I'm not taking tickets off the table. We're still police officers. But at the same time, we want to just keep traffic moving. That's the primary goal.
Assistant Chief Steve Herjack says Seattle Police is going to be positioning uniformed officers at intersections around the city to actually help direct traffic. They're going to focus on the intersections first, where they see the most block-the-box violations, crosswalk violations, bike lane violations, and, of course, bus-only lane violations.
The officers are going to be stationed there where they can prevent vehicles from blocking that spot where the bus would make it across the street or not, or make it across the intersection. So we plan strategically to try and prevent that in the first place.
And speaking of buses, those officers are also going to keep them from going into the intersections as well, where they don't have room, so they're not blocking the box, which can also be a problem, as we all know. Assistant Chief Herjack says that everybody is in this thing together.
We're going to have the officers there to help make sure to get you through the intersections, but it's vitally important that you keep those intersections clear. If you try and make it through that red light, you're just going to block traffic for thousands of other commuters. So please do your best to obey the laws.
It's the first time I've ever heard a police officer say, please try to obey the law. So I kind of expect to see officers treating these intersections as you come across them like they do streets after a Seahawks or a Mariners game, or maybe when you get out of the opera. They're waving their hands, go,
after church, they put up the special cones,
exactly.
and they take the personal touch, and traffic moves really well because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know, same for pedestrians, because pedestrians have a role in this thing too. You don't cross against that flashing light because that prevents people from turning and doing things like that. So they'll be looking for everything. Now, where you won't find the loose attitude toward tickets is in the new no parking zones that the city is putting up today across the area. The city has eliminated parking on key streets to provide emergency corridors for first responders. The city's director of downtown mobility, Heather Mark, says, you need to obey these zones or you will pay the price.
In order to make space for emergency vehicles and for transit, we're restricting parking in a number of locations. People should really pay attention to those signs because we're also going to be towing with alacrity.
If you don't know what alacrity means, Mark says basically the city's looking forward to towing you if you violate that parking zone, and they're going to be smiling while they do it. So that if you're looking for my vague definition of alacrity, it's kind of a gleeful movement. Anyway, so you've been warned here. The city means business when it comes to keeping those intersections and roads moving as best as it can. One thing you need to be aware of, too, say you have an emergency yourself and you call 911. Be prepared for the first responders to maybe a little bit delayed as well, even though they will have those emergency corridors where the no parking zones have been put up. They've got to navigate the same congestion that you do. So just be prepared. Response times could be up and down, and they're going to do their best to move these officers around wherever they see the choke points and try to work in real time to get this traffic moving as best as they can.
All right. Alacrity.
Alacrity.
Brisk and cheerful readiness.
Yeah, so they're brisk and ready. That means they're happy and they're looking forward to doing it.
Excellent.
I am so ready for the dose of kindness, Dave. But it's about the partial government shutdown. Because I'm trying to find a little bit of goodness. It's what I try to do with the dose of kindness. All this necessary, sometimes hard to hear news can take a toll. So in the dose of kindness, we try to find a silver lining. No doubt reaching a dire status for many federal workers. They depend on paychecks in the same way one of us do. We've heard from federal workers. They're weighing whether to pay rent, medications, food. It's a kind of stress you can only begin to understand if you've ever been there. But we can all try to empathize if we haven't. And that's what restaurant owners across the country are doing, like the owner of the Z Burger chain in Washington, D.C.
Burger, French fries, and a drink. I'm doing an entire meal for the government workers today from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. beat anybody with a federal government ID.
He says offering these meals for free is the right thing to do.
I hope we can get these people back to work. And I'm just doing my part to be able to help out. And if everybody in the community helps out these folks, it just may make things a little bit easier for them.
And you can do a search online. Z Burger is not alone. Locations of the Ruby Slipper Cafe, based in New Orleans, are offering free meals to federal workers, too. They say it's all about being neighborly and giving back to the community. In Dallas, Mother Flaming Tacos are selling for just a dollar to federal workers all day, every day, they say, until the shutdown ends.
Mother Flaming Tacos?
Yes.
Okay.
I wish I could have played their quote for you.
Oh, I see. It's time for the Sports Insider, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Danny O'Neill is here. Dustin Ackley is coming back to the Mariners?
Yes, he is. He's been signed to a minor league contract, and I'm trying really hard to be mature about this, Dave, because this is a no-lose situation. This is a former top prospect of the Mariners, the number two overall pick in a draft, who didn't pan out here. Uh-huh. And he's coming back for a chance to reclaim his career.
Well,
get a fresh start.
That makes sense, because so many times somebody who doesn't pan out here, you know, becomes an all-star Yankee or something. So why not bring them back before that happens?
Because that means that there's the possibility that I'm going to have my hopes aroused again by him. Say he has a great spring training, Dave.
Yeah.
Say he makes the team. How comfortable am I going to feel with him on the opening day roster? Because there's going to be this little bit of nagging doubt that the bottom's always going to completely drop out. I don't know how pleasurable an experience this is going to be rooting for Dustin Ackley.
How do you feel about letting Ichiro play?
Well, that I might have to set myself on fire. If he's playing for the Mariners when they're back here in the United States, I don't know how I'm going to handle that.
Huh. Why don't we bring back Alvin Davis?
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. Because we're a Major League Baseball team that's actually focused on winning games. See, I'm trying to be mature. I'm trying to be and look at it and say,
what's Ken Griffey doing these days?
Last we saw him. These are not examples that are helping me feel better about this.
I heard he's been set in bronze and unable to play.
Oh, that's true. He is. Yeah. He's got an awesome statue.
But we have made some smart moves. Didn't we just pick up a player from Japan who's very promising?
Yusei Kikuchi.
Yusei Kikuchi. I have not.
Yusei Kikuchi. I say left-handed pitcher.
So that's good. Yeah.
It is. Yes, that's very promising, and he'll be good. Here's the Mariners are rebuilding, right? Mm-hmm. That's everything that we've been told is that they're looking to be good in 2020, probably 2021.
Can they be good with players they're simply dusting off?
That would be my answer of probably not. Is Ichiro going to be good 2 years from now? Absolutely not. And in the interim, do I want to watch him have a last swan song with the team? I've already seen that twice.
Yes.
I've already watched that twice, and I don't know if I want to. And this is coming from someone, I love Ichiro. Ichiro is my second favorite baseball player I've ever watched play. I don't think I'm totally okay with him playing for the Mariners in the two games that they play in Japan. Those are regular season games. They count, but you get an extra man on the 25-man roster, so it becomes 26. Absolutely. Give Ichiro that. That's awesome. When they come back and start playing games that mean something here, I want it to be. It's not a heritage museum.
What about this guy,
Russell Wilson?
Yeah,
man, he's going to Hawaii in the Pro Bowl.
No. I'm saying the Mariners. He plays baseball.
Yes.
What about it's a rebuilding year? Why not? If you're going to bring back Ichiro, why not have a cameo with Russell? And if he's really good, keep him on.
Or at least let the rumors swirl so his contract can go up in price.
Maybe I need to make myself more clear. No dog and pony shows.
Why would it be a dog and pony show?
Yes, he's a dog and pony show. If he could hit, he would have kept playing baseball 5, 6, 7 years ago. Can't hit.
I refuse to believe Russell Wilson can't do
anything. Can't hit the curve.
All right, fine.
Batted 200 in the low level of minor league baseball.
He also can't do social media very well.
He's getting better.
What is that now?
He's getting better. He has had some somewhat funny interactions with a guy named Cable Thanos, who makes hype videos for the Seattle Seahawks once per week.
Oh, good.
He also was caught singing before the Dallas game.
I did enjoy
game.
That one, but that was a what do you call it? That was a moment that he didn't know he was necessarily being recorded.
Oh, he knew he had a mic on. He did that for sure.
But
I thought that was really well
done.
Cringy. Yeah, sometimes. I like to think he might be improving, though. But no, I don't want to see him playing for the Mariners. Okay. Plus, he already signed with the Yankees.
Nice try, Dave.
He signed with the Yankees?
Yeah, he was with the Yankees last year. They had their dog and pony show. They specialize in the dog and pony show.
Huh.
Yeah, right. He's like, oh, I'm going to go out there and always dream to be in pinstripes. Yeah. Now I get to get a motivational speech in one.
He'd be the only Seattle athlete who did not work out with the Yankees.
Justin Ackley didn't. He went to the Yankees. He stunk there, too.
Huh. I think everybody's going to be surprised, too, at how soon we're going to start seeing baseball. They've moved it up.
Yeah, you get some early pitchers and catchers. I think it's right about Valentine's Day.
February?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they got to go to Japan and play these baseball games. So everything's going to start early.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Didn't you know that, Dave? You're a pitcher at Safeco Field.
Well, yeah.
Or T-Mobile Park or whatever it is now.
Usually they don't call me up until later in the season.
Yeah, if we bring Russell Wilson in, why don't we just have Dave Ross start a game?
Oh, that would
celebrate
awesome.
His 41st year here at Cairo.
It was a beautiful pitch.
Get him out there. Absolutely. He could throw 90 more. You get the first one down.
As long as there's nobody at the plate at the time.
No, we're going to have we're going to have you plunk some people.
I've been working on his backdoor slider. It's not bad. It's pretty filthy.
You know what? I've always had a question about the backdoor slider. Why is there not a front door slider?
I don't know, because I guess that's just called a regular pitch.
Nobody ever throws it. Like one of those, oh, got him with the front door slider. No, it's always the back door.
All I know is that when I throw my slider, the back door hits me on the way out. Our Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Thank you, Danny.
You bet. Talk to you guys soon.
There is nothing like going to a homeless sweep to give you some perspective on the crisis, and that's what Cairo Radio's Carolyn Osorio did yesterday when they cleaned up the I-5 camp near the Northgate Mall and met with Will Lemke with the city's homeless response team.
It's a large site that's very visible, and you see a lot of garbage here, which is a concern, and one of the reasons why we're cleaning up this site is that it's a public health risk having waste and food out here, you have rodents and whatnot. I know the businesses on the other side here have been contacting the media, reporting that they've had public safety issues. So we're here to make sure that this site can be cleaned up.
Carolyn's here now. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning, Dave.
Because she gets here earlier than all of us. I remember you saying yesterday when you were reporting from the camp that the navigation team was there to offer alternative housing to the people who were being moved, and nobody took them up on it?
Okay, so they have been there not only since the beginning of the year, but also in December. And throughout all that time, none of them, even up until I left yesterday, none of them had taken it up. I got an email from him last night. About 5 p.m., that one person had taken him up on the offer.
So where are they going to go? And why don't they take the offer?
Well, here was my biggest takeaway from the whole thing, was that it was very perfunctory. You know, the caution tape got wrapped around the site, city trucks pulled up, social workers were on hand, as was the SPD, homeless advocates, and the media. And it was like everyone showed up for an intervention except the person who needs help. They were already in the wind. And presumably, I talked to one homeless guy named Juice, and, you know, he didn't know where he was going, but wherever they were going was better than what was being offered by the city based on whatever their situation was, you know, whether it's drugs and alcohol or they didn't want to go to the shelter.
I mean, are you saying that once the tape went up, they just left or did they hang around? Did they talk to anybody or try to persuade anybody?
Well, it was really funny. I got there at like 5:30 in the morning. So I was there and I parked my car right next to it. And so there was all this flurry of activity with people leaving with shopping carts. One guy almost got hit by a car with a loaded shopping cart. So it was almost like all this, you know, frenetic activity at the site. And it was still dark. And then when light hit, there was all these tents. There was about 12 tents.
Yeah.
And when I actually walked over there, there was like nobody in the tents. There was like one person in the tent.
They knew the cleanup was coming.
They knew the cleanup was coming. And they just didn't, like I said, they didn't want to be there for the drama of it all. They just wanted to be gone and do what they wanted. I mean, that's my perception. It was really strange. It was really, you know, it's become just like the cleaning crew came in, they put up the tape. You know, they knew, everybody knew their role in it. It wasn't like it feels like a couple
but
years
no
ago.
Solution. There
but,
was no,
but no solution.
Resolution. You talk to a lot of the business owners, people who live in the area, because, you know, I get off on that exit a lot on I-5 because there's a 24-hour Starbucks right there on my way to work.
Nice.
And that didn't exist about a month ago. And suddenly, just boom, it went up. Mm-hmm. And while there was garbage, and as you said, a lot of the people who live and work near there said the smell of feces and all that, I noticed that they had trash bags that they would pile up as if it was sort of organized.
It was, what I saw was absolutely disorganized, disarray, garbage. I mean, he said that there was probably about 12 people. I saw about 12, other people I talked to about 20 tents. So we're talking about 12 to 20 people, people coming and going. For that amount of people with all that garbage, It was incredible, piled in shopping carts. There was just, I mean, it was slick and it was smelly and it was like, you know, people were complaining. And I'd heard from one of the business owners that they'd actually even seen children there. So, yeah. Which is, we've heard that before, but you hear it and it's just, and you see it. And it's
tell
just,
me this, what's your impression? If since apparently they were just willing to move and they have no interest in any shelter, why tolerate the establishment of the next camp at all? That these are people who are not going to take up the city on shelter, and they're offering beds to everybody. Why should we still tolerate these camps?
Well, I think that's what everybody's asking. But my opinion, based on what I talked to, is this is a wedge issue. This is like abortion. This is like gun rights in the sense that people are taking their sides, and any kind of give and take feels like somebody's like losing something.
Well, what's the pro-camp side? What do they got to offer? I mean, there are organized camps. I mean, the tent cities, which I guess are churches used to fulfill their duty to do, you know, material good works for people. But these unsanctioned encampments are basically people who want to live a nomadic life, I guess, in the middle of the freeway, which is, I don't see how that's acceptable.
And at least
in
from
any
the
way.
Pro side, I've at least heard that, okay, then at least let's give them a humanized way to live by adding, you know, you've heard it from Sawant and other city council members saying, put toilets in, put trash cans
but not
in.
On the freeways.
And
that's
until
ridiculous.
They're ready for services.
Well, that's what one
them.
Advocate was saying. We need to bring services where they are. We need to treat this like it's a rock concert. We need to bring in like, but dumpsters and.
But
and,
you're, they're acting as if, oh, we can't move. But what you said is they were gone by the time the cleanup crew got there. So they obviously can move.
They moved with a quickness, with a lightning, and they left their stuff behind. They left about 12 tents. It was just, you know, the people that I was like, you know, the city is doing what we've asked. They're coming in and they're cleaning up the camps over and over and over again. There's over 400 unsanctioned camps that they just go and then, you know, they go in the wind and they go to another camp. I mean, that was my feeling from it all.
Carolyn Osorio. Thank you, Carolyn. Mike Lewis is here to talk hockey, but before we start, we're going to premiere our new hockey theme. Go ahead. I like that.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. It keeps going. There's a big punish here. Here we go. Score.
You know, at this point, maybe it should be the sound of construction more than anything else.
Probably. Boy, I've never seen a league give us as much love as the NHL. They just keep saying nice things and giving us good news, like an all-star game in 7 years.
Yeah, they like to do that. I mean, remember, I think that the Major League Baseball did that as well, not for when the Mariners got here, but certainly when they opened Safeco Field, I think now T-Mobile Field. So, that is not, they want to get, build momentum in a town. They're also talking about holding the draft here within the first decade or so. So they're really trying to front load interest here, but I don't think that there's any shortage of interest even without that.
Yeah, I heard that, of course, we know about how the season ticket sales went. It was boffo. They've been selling suites now as well?
Correct. Yeah, in fact, that's why he was here. He was here actually to meet with not only the partners themselves, the hockey partners, but also with the potential high rollers who are going to be paying a lot of money for suites, sponsorships, things like that. That was the real reason he was here. And then, you know, later on in the day, they had the media and fan availability.
Right. We're talking about the NHL commissioner,
Gary Bettman.
Gary Bettman. So the big unanswered question, of course, is how they're going to deal with traffic. Was that discussed at all?
It was discussed, yes. How they're going to deal with it, that's still unclear. I asked Gary Bettman about this specifically, and he said, look, the league does know about it. We're comfortable that they have a local. Essentially, he said, look, they told us they can fix it or they can at least improve it. We're hoping that they can, but there really isn't. I mean, they're putting a plan in place, but the interesting thing is that they did announce they're having – they literally are going to have a top management position dealing with nothing but traffic. And that's not just for the NHL team, but for they're going to have 250 some odd events a year in this place, big events. And so they're going to need, this is not going to be a hockey problem. This is going to be an arena traffic management situation that's going to be perpetual.
Well, once the tunnel is done, though, you basically have an underground driveway straight to Seattle Center, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that is going to help, but it's going to be an underground driveway of X number of lanes and a whole bunch of cars trying to get in and out. And so, and the problem with Key Arena historically has always been, it has never really been getting there. it's getting out. Yeah. Getting out has always been the issue, and that's the one that they're going to have to do some creative things on Mercer and some creative things with transit to at least get it operational, because everyone knows it's going to be a problem. But also, Todd Lewicki said something interesting. He's a general manager of the team. He said, look, it's an urban arena. It's going to be a little harder to get mm-hmm. to and from, acknowledging that. He said, but look where you're going. You're going to the center of a really beautiful city, right? And
Madison Square Garden is
bingo.
The center of New York City, and people manage to get there. But there's a subway stop. So.
Right. And a lot of cities, though, have gone back to the very urban-centric arenas, and people like it. It makes a really great district. The problem getting to and fro, I mean, people are going to have to get there early and plan on leaving late.
Yeah. So what about the name and the logo and all the other stuff?
That is going to be interesting. He knew, in fact, Bettman was smart enough to say, we're not making a name announcement. The first two things he said, because everyone wants to know. They did do one kind of funny thing, is that they eliminated the Metropolitans as a name.
Really?
He said
he
said he can't see that happening. That was the original team, actually the one that won the Stanley Cup. He said he can't. They have a division, the Metropolitan Division, so they don't really want to double up on that. And he said for his vote, and since he does help make that decision, he's not a fan of that, but he wouldn't tip his hand where he was going. Yeah.
Tell me about that new training facility at Northgate. We spent last weekend on it. We take these urban walks, and one of them took us to Northgate and the whole Thornton Creek area and that apartment development, which is absolutely gorgeous.
It's going to be a big deal up there. And they're building 3 full sheets of ice. So this is not going to be small. It's going to be the training facility for the team, but it's also going to be ground zero for youth hockey in this area. Yeah. And they expect, Phoenix has shown a resurgence in youth hockey. Los Angeles did back in the days when the Kings first arrived. They expect that there has been, if you play hockey in Seattle right now, you can't get ice time. There are 11 p.m. leagues because ice time is so rare and hard to come by. This is going to change hockey development in Seattle massively. I think this is actually weirdly going to have probably more of an impact even than the team itself.
Wow. Well, that's great news, and I haven't been to the center in a while. Is construction underway yet? Or
yeah, they've sealed off the whole section around the former Key Arena. So that portion of it's making it difficult to get in and out. A lot of construction has rolled in, but they haven't begun the deconstruction in earnest. It's just going to get much busier down there. But right now, they've already sealed off the areas that you can no longer walk because of the construction.
Are they taking the roof off? I mean, because it's going to have the same profile when it's done, but do they have to take the whole thing apart? Or
no, they're so the major pyramid points on it, the superstructure is going to stay, but they're going to hollow everything out within that, and then they're going to dig down 15 feet or so. So it is going to be, that is going to be the last thing standing, really, of the original arena.
Yeah. Well, you know, 15 feet in, that's where the new subway station is going to be.
Bingo.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Career's Mike Lewis.